William's family had welcomed the suggestion of William becoming a scout. "It will keep him out of mischief," they had said. They were optimistic where William was concerned. Things went fairly smoothly for some time. He received with saint-like patience the eloquence of his elder sister Ethel when she found her silk scarf tied into innumerable knots.
"Oh, they're jolly good knots,"
was all he said. There were times when he forced complete strangers, much to their embarrassment, to be the unwilling recipients of his deed of kindness. He took the scout's law of a daily deed of kindness in its most literal sense. He was to do one, and one only, deed of kindness a day. There were times when he answered any demand for help with,
"No, I've done it today."
He had been looking forward to the holidays for a long time. He was to go under canvas at the end of the first week. The first day of the holidays began badly. William's parents received a note from a neighbour whose garden adjoined William's and whose life had been rendered intolerable by William's efforts upon his bugle. The bugle was confiscated. Darkness descended upon William's soul.
"Well," he muttered, "I'm going under canvas next week, and I'm jolly glad I'm going. Perhaps you'll be sorry when I'm gone."
He went out into the garden and stood gazing moodily into space, his hands in the pockets of his short scout trousers, for William dressed on any and every occasion in his official costume. "Can't even have the bugle," he complained to the landscape. "Can't tie knots in any of their old things. What's the good of being a scout?" His indignation grew, and with it a desire to be avenged upon his family.
"I'd like to do something," he confided to a rosebush. "Something just to show 'em."
Then his face brightened. He had an idea. He'd get lost. He'd get really lost.
They'd be sorry then, all right. They'd perhaps think he was dead, and they'd be sorry then, all right.
He imagined their relief, their tearful apologies, when at last he returned to the bosom of his family. It was worth trying, anyway. He set off down the drive. He decided to stay away for lunch and supper, and to return at dusk to a penitent, conscience-stricken family. He first made his way to a neighbouring wood, where he arranged a pile of twigs for a fire, but they refused to light, even with the aid of the match that William found adhering to a piece of putty in the recess of one of his pockets. He felt bored, and began to wonder whether it was lunchtime or not. He scouted the wood, and by his wood lore traced three distinct savage tribes' passage through the wood, and found the tracks of several elephants. It must be about lunchtime. He could imagine Ethel hunting for him wildly with growing pangs of remorse. She'd wish she'd made less fuss over that old scarf. His father would think with shame of his conduct in the matter of the bugle. Perhaps he had the bugle on the table, ready to give back to him. Perhaps he'd even bought him a new one. He imagined the scene of his return. He would be nobly forgiving. He would accept the gift of the new bugle without a word of reproach. He was getting jolly hungry. It must be after lunchtime. But it would spoil it all to go home too early. Here he caught sight of a minute figure regarding him with a steady gaze and holding a paper bag in one hand.
"What you dressed up like that for?" said the apparition.
William looked down at his sacred uniform and scowled.
"I'm a scout," he said loftily.
"Scout?"
repeated the apparition, with an air of polite boredom.
"What's your name?"
"William."
"Mine's Thomas. Will you catch me a wops? Look at my wopses."
He opened the bag slightly, and William caught sight of a crowd of wasps buzzing about inside the bag.
"Want more?"
demanded the infant.
"Want lots more. Look, snails."
He brought out a handful of snails from a miniature pocket and put them on the ground.
"Watch them put their horns out. Watch them walk. Look! They're walking! They're walking!"
His voice was a scream of ecstasy. He took them up and returned them to their pocket. From another, he drew out a wriggling mass.
Woodlice,
he explained casually.
Got worms in another pocket.
He returned the woodlice to his pocket, except one which he held between a finger and thumb laid thoughtfully against his lip.
Well, whoopsies now. You get them for me.
William roused himself from his bewilderment. How do you catch 'em? He said.
Wings. Get hold of their wings, and they don't sting. Sometimes they do, though. Then your hands go big.
A wasp settled near him, and very neatly the young naturalist picked him up and put him in his paper prison.
Now you get me one,
he ordered William. William determined not to be outshone by this minute but dauntless stranger. And it would, he supposed, be a deed of kindness anyway. So, as a wasp obligingly settled on a flower near him, he put out his hand, only to withdraw it with a yell of pain and apply it to his mouth. Ow! Ow! Ooh! He said. Crumbs! Thomas emitted a peal of laughter.
You stung! Did it sting you? Funny!
William's expression of rage and pain was exquisite to him.
Come on, boy! He ordered at last. Let's go somewhere else!
William's bewildered dignity made a last stand. You can go. I'm playing by myself.
All right,
agreed Thomas.
You play by yourself, and me play by myself, and we'll be together, playing by ourselves.
He set off down a path, and meekly William followed. It must be jolly late, almost tea time.
I'm hungry, said Thomas suddenly. Give me some breakfast.
I haven't got any, said William irritably.
Well, find some.
I can't. There isn't any to find.
Well, buy some.
I haven't got any money.
Well, buy some money.
Goaded, William turned on him. Go away, he bellowed. Thomas's blue eyes beneath a mop of curls met his coldly.
Don't talk so loud, he said sternly. There's some blackberries there. You can get me some blackberries.
William began to walk away, but Thomas trotted by his side.
There!
He persisted.
Just where I'm pointing. Lovely, great, big, huge ones. Get 'em for my breakfast.
Reluctantly, the scout turned to perform his deed of kindness. Thomas consumed blackberries faster than William could gather them.
Up there,
he commanded.
No, the one right up there I want. I want it kick. I've eaten all the others.
William was scratched and breathless, and his shirt was torn, when at last the rapacious Thomas was satisfied. Then he partook of a little refreshment himself, while Thomas turned out his pockets.
I'll let him go now,
he said. One of his woodlice, however, stayed motionless where he put it.
What's the matter with it? Said William, curiously.
I expect me's the matter with it,
said Thomas, succinctly.
Now get me some little fishes and tadpoles and water things,
he went on, cheerfully. William turned round from his blackberry bush.
Well, I won't, he said. I've had enough.
You've had enough breakfast? I found a little tin for the things. So big kick! Ooh, here's a fly. A green fly. It's sitting on my finger. Does it like me 'cause it's sitting on my finger?
No, said William, turning a purple-stained countenance round scornfully. It must be nearly night. He didn't want to be too hard on them. He wanted to be as kind as possible. He'd forgive them at once when he got home. He'd ask for one or two things he wanted, as well as the new bugle, a new penknife, and an engine with a real boiler.
What for does it not like me?
Persisted Thomas. William was silent. Question and questioner were beneath contempt.
What for does it not like me?
Flies don't like people, silly.
What for not?
Well, they don't know anything about him.
Well, I'll tell it about me. My name's Thomas,
he said to the fly politely.
Now does it like me?
William groaned, but the fly had now vanished, and Thomas once more grew impatient.
Come on! Come on and find things for me!
William's manly spirit was so far broken that he followed his new acquaintance to a neighbouring pond, growling threateningly but impotently.
Now,
commanded his small tyrant.
Take off your shoes and socks, and go and find things for me.
Take off yours, growled William, and find things for yourself.
No, crocodiles might be there and bite my toes, and pitonopotamuses might be there. If you don't go in, I'll scream and scream and scream.
William went in. He walked gingerly about the muddy pond. Thomas watched him critically from the bank.
I don't like your hair,
William growled. He caught various small swimming objects in the tin and brought them back to the bank for inspection.
I want more than that,
said Thomas calmly.
Well, you won't get it, retorted William.
He was just beginning to put on his shoes and socks when, with a loud cry, a woman came running down the path.
Tommy, she said. My little darling, Tommy, I thought you were lost.
She turned furiously to William.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself. A great boy of your age leading a little child like this into mischief. You ought to know better. And you a scout.
William gasped. Well, he said, and I've been doing deeds of kindness on him all morning. She turned away indignantly, holding Thomas's hand.
You're never to go with that nasty rough boy again, darling, she said.
Got lots of wopses and some fishes, murmured Thomas contentedly.
They disappeared down the path. With a feeling of depression and disillusionment, William turned to go home. Then his spirits rose. After all, he'd got rid of Thomas, and he was going home to a contrite family. It must be about supper time. It would be getting dark soon. It wouldn't matter if he'd just got in for supper. It would have given them time to think things over. He could see his father speaking unsteadily and holding out his hand. My boy, let bygones be bygones. If there is anything you want... His father had never said anything of this sort to him yet, but... By a violent stretch of imagination, he could just conceive it. His mother, of course, would cry over him, and so would Ethel.
Oh, dear William, oh, do forgive us. You've been so miserable since you went away. We will never treat you so again.
This, again, was unlike the Ethel he knew, but sorrow has a refining effect on all characters. He entered the gate self-consciously. Ethel was at the front door. She looked at his torn shirt and mud-caked knees.
"You'd better hurry if you're going to be ready for lunch," she said coldly.
Lunch? What time is it?"
10 to 1. Father's in, so I warn you,"
she added unpleasantly. He entered the house in a dazed fashion. His mother was in the hall.
"William!" she said impatiently. Another shirt torn. You really are careless. You'll have to stop being a scout if that's the way you treat your clothes. And look at your knees.
Pale and speechless, he went towards the stairs. His father was coming out of the library smoking a pipe. He looked at his son grimly.
If you aren't downstairs cleaned by the time the lunch bell goes, my son, he said, you won't see that bugle of yours this side of Christmas.
William swallowed. Yes, father, he said meekly, and went slowly upstairs to the bathroom. Life was a rotten show.